Well, let's get right to it because we got a playoff game coming up here on Sunday here at Gillette Stadium. When you and I know you've talked about this many times before, especially with divisional opponents, how different the second game is to the first game. And obviously, it's the second time you played these guys. But when you get a game that turned out the way it did, where lots of mistakes were made by the other team early on in the game, game gets kind of carried away. How do you go into the second game anticipating changes that they might make? How do you do that? When you're putting together a game plan, how do you anticipate what they might be doing differently?
I think each time you play a team, the plays match up differently, and I think that game was certainly a lot closer than the final score would indicate. And if four or five plays turned out a little bit differently than the way they did, I think that would have definitely been reflected in the final score. But it was what it was, and I don't think that game really has much bearing on this game at all, other than you can see some of the people match up against each other on the field. But the way it'll play out this time, I'm sure it'll have a whole different storyline.
Right, because they get themselves in a lot of trouble really early, and you've said this many times, a few plays like that and the game can get carried away. So do you go back to what you anticipated from that game, or do you expect that they're going to make some changes here, Bill?
Well, of course, we don't know what they're going to do, so we'll have to be ready for things that they've shown and also things that we think they might do based on whatever research we have there. But, again, that we've played 16 games. They played 17. I think a lot of you are what you are at this point. It comes down to not plays but execution and how well you block, tackle, throw, catch, kick, run, so forth. So that's a big part of the game, and that's why the teams playing at this time of year are playing at this time of year because they do those things pretty well. I don't think it's a big X and O thing. I think it's more of teams that play well, players that perform well, those teams move on.
I do want to follow up on that, though, because I remember you telling us, Bill, after that first Houston game, and I think that was the 12th game of the season for them, that they showed you some things that you hadn't seen in the previous games. They gave you some trouble. After that point, as you look at their five games since they played you, did they continue to do some things that they did in Foxborough, or was that just for that moment?
I think the thing to look at there is just how they matched up against us. I mean, it doesn't really matter how they match up against somebody else. It's how they matched up against us and what defensively, what groupings they wanted to play, how they wanted to match up their personnel against ours. Offensively, the groupings that they had on the field, the formations that they used, how they wanted to try to attack us. That's really more about the specific matchup between our team and their team than it is some other team they competed against. And there's certainly a lot of things we can learn from watching other game films and watching those matchups and what worked and what didn't and how things went. But ultimately, we're not going to know those matchups until Sunday afternoon, and that's the way it always is.
How would you guard against complacency or overconfidence in a situation like this where, recently you've played this team and you did a pretty good job against them at your home ball field?
Right. Well, we've been in that situation several times this year already in all the division games. We won the first division game. We played against all those teams, and then we played them again. So I don't think it's anything that's that uncommon. I think we all realize that it comes down to what team performs the best Sunday afternoon. And it doesn't really matter what happened in some other game or what anybody thinks is going to happen. It's how the players perform in the competition Sunday afternoon, and that's what we're all geared for.
Can you take confidence from that game and not be overconfident? Can you still take some confidence out of the way you played that game?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think our team has a confidence issue. I think the most important thing for us to do is prepare well and be ready to go out there and execute our game plan. But at the same time, we have to be ready to adjust to some things that we are going to see that we haven't prepared for. I'm sure that there'll be some of those, and we'll have to deal with them. And both teams will, I'm sure. And we'll see which team can handle those things the best, which team can go out there and execute the best.
Bringing out the tennis rackets again for J.J. Watt this week?
Well, we'll do all the things we feel like we can do to help prepare our team for the game, whatever that happens to be.
How do you figure him out? I mean, he just seems to be so mobile. Is there any rhyme or reason to what he does? He seems to come from one side, crosses the face of the center, loops on the other side. How do you figure him out?
Well, I think he's really a pretty disciplined player. And when he's stunning, he goes in that direction. Depending on what play you happen to have on, then you have to deal with it. If he's not stunning, he's playing more straight up, then he takes advantage of the opportunity that he gets on the man that's blocking him, whether it's pass rush or run defense. And a lot of times he'll knock those guys back, but sometimes he can use his quickness and get around him and still get back in on the play. I think that's what makes him a special player, his ability to play strong and to hold a point, but also his ability to move and get back in position, even though he's maybe out of it for a second, but he's quick enough to get back in and avoid people and get into gaps and get on the edge of blockers, things like that makes him very disruptive. And they have a lot of guys on their front that can do that too. Of course, Smith and Cody and Reed and Connor and Merciless and all those guys. So they have a very active front. It's not just him. He's certainly a big problem, but it's a very active front.
I was just going to ask you that. If you pay too much attention to him, do you not open the door for somebody else to go burn you?
Yeah, well, again, they got 11 guys out there, so you can't double everybody. Somebody's got to block the man they got to block, and if it's Watt, it's Watt, or if it's Smith, it's Smith, or if it's Cody, or whoever it is. So, and again, our guys have blocked a lot of good players this year. Watt's certainly a good one, but we blocked a lot of other good players, and we'll have to block them again. It's that time of year. It's playoff time. So every team that you play is going to have good players, good coaches, good schemes, things that are tough. That's what playoff football is.
I want to ask you about a couple of games that took place this weekend, and a theme in two of the games was injuries. Minnesota didn't have his starting quarterback for the playoff game at Green Bay, and then yesterday the big RG3 situation, should he have come out of the game earlier, and going back and forth between Griffin and Shanahan. I just want to ask you, do you ever talk to players about injuries during the game, or do you just leave that strictly to the training and medical staff?
No, sometimes we talk about it.
Do you ever get to the point where you say, because part of the discussion with Shanahan, you said, well, he told me he was okay. He told me he was hurt and not injured, and I went with my gut. Do you get to the point where you ask the player if he's okay to stay in the game?
Well, no. Again, I mean, there's a medical decision that comes first, and then there's a competitive football decision, but I'd say the bottom line on all that really is every situation's different. I don't think necessarily anything that I've ever done or experienced could shed any light on another situation with another team, another player, another coach. I think each one is specific and it's different. And I'm sure that Coach Shanahan and Griffin and or anybody else that's involved is always trying to do the best thing and the right thing and do what's best for the team and do what's right. And so I would never second-guess those kind of decisions from the outside, because I'm sure that competitively and really from a safety standpoint, I'm sure that everybody's doing the right thing, what they feel like is right at that particular time. So there's really nothing else I could add to it, because I'm just not a part of it.
Arian Foster stepped it up over the weekend with...
Hold on one second, Steve. Oh, we just got the word on RG3. Torn ACL plus torn PCL. He will be out 14 to 18 months.
Wow.
That's a significant injury right there. Wow. Yeah. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
Oh, no worries. I was just talking about Arian Foster stepped up this weekend, not just running the ball, maybe a little bit better than he had over the last few weeks, but also I think he ended up with 7 or 8 catches, too. Is that something that you've seen over the year from him, that he's always been a pretty good receiver?
Sure he has. Yes, he does a good job of the ball in his hands, however he gets it. And if you go back to our game, he caught some of those balls out on the sideline, those wide routes, and we had a little trouble with those. So I'm sure that we'll see him getting the ball on screen passes, on checkdowns, and as part of the actual pass pattern, the distribution of the receivers, and I'm sure he's a good guy for them to throw the ball to. He can catch, and he's very dangerous with the ball in his hands. Excellent receiver.
Bill, the league apparently is thinking about the possibility of adding more playoff teams into the picture, to the point where I think Peter King wrote today that they might even consider playing three games on Saturday, three games on Sunday the first weekend, or playing those over a two-weekend period, and maybe no bye for teams. Any of this interest you at all?
Not really. You know, we really need to think about what we can do to beat Houston. And, you know, what, I'm sure there'll be a time and a place to discuss all the other things at the end of the year, whether it's playoffs or kickoffs or whatever it is. So right now we're just really focused on Houston, and that's where we need to be.
When did you start on them, Bill? Was it immediately after that game, or did you hedge some bets and say, well, I think I like Houston over Cincinnati? When did you start your preparation for them?
Well, we probably followed what we normally do. So we, after each game, we take a look at the we analyze the game ourselves, how the game went, what we'd do differently, what things were good, what things weren't good. Did we practice the right things, so forth and so on. So we do that after every game, Houston, San Francisco, it doesn't matter, Seattle. I mean, pick a team. That we do that after every game. So there's an element of that. As we got into the last couple of regular season weeks, the Miami week, Jacksonville week, as I said, we had some people in our organization start to do some advanced work on some of the teams that we could end up playing. And then when we finally found out that, who the playoff teams were, then we knew that the Houston game would be the first game on the docket, and if they won, that's who we'd be playing. So last week that was kind of ahead of the second game, and if Houston had lost, then we would have turned our attention to the Baltimore-Indianapolis game Saturday night and Sunday until that winner was determined. So a little bit of it was sequential. But the fact that Houston's the highest-seeded team, and that was probably the most likely team for us to play, we certainly wouldn't overlook them.
Did you spend a lot of time in this past week cleaning up some of your own stuff?
Yeah, sure. It was a combination of working on some things that looking toward our opponent, but also looking more towards things that we need to do no matter who we play, things that we could work on. So
How about situational stuff? Because there have been certain little situations that have cropped up over the years that have benefited you guys in the postseason. How much of that stuff do you go back and remind these guys with?
Oh, we spent some time on that, too, sure. In our meetings, we definitely covered some situational things that have come up this year in the league in the past few weeks that we can learn from other teams or other situations in other games. And we talked about those, talked about how we would handle them or what our strategy would be or what would be the right or the wrong thing to do in those situations. Right, absolutely. Just trying to keep everybody's mind into it, even though we weren't playing this weekend, that mentally we wanted to continue to challenge ourselves to stay on top of our game as it relates to situations, just as you mentioned.
You know what, Bill, I was thinking about this. I know I just jumped you, Diassi. I'm sorry. But no, I've gone to the research department again, Bill. Watch out.
It's about time.
Some numbers. The numbers are flying around. It's pretty dangerous. And you've had some stability here in the last couple of weeks. You know, Josh McDaniels says he's going to stay. He's not pursuing any head coaching jobs. So you get to keep the staff intact. I was looking at the AFC East since you've been here. Your record, not only your record versus Buffalo, Miami, and New York, but the amount of coaches that those teams have had since 2000. You want to guess how many coaches you've faced since 2000?
Head coaches, no. Three about, teams. Let me throw it out there. Three teams.
Yeah, how about just Buffalo alone?
I'd say four for each team. I'd say 11 or 12.
17.
Dang.
There have been 17 coaches since 2000 with those three teams. The Patriots' record versus those teams is 58-20 since 2000. Pretty impressive. But I know you're the son of a coach, so you knew about the business and how fluid it could be. But do you ever think it would get to this point where, I mean, a guy, it's hard to keep up with some of these changes between general managers and coaches. You know, a year on the job and guys are having their jobs discussed. Do you ever think it would get to this point?
You know, that's a great question, Michael. I would say, first of all, when you when I got into coaching, when you get into the business, you don't even think of it in those terms. You're just trying to get a job, get somebody to hire you, hope you can contribute, find a little bit of a niche, coach something that you can, you know, be good at or somewhat good at so you can continue to do what you want to do. So you don't really think of it in those terms. But as you have more longevity in the profession, then you probably do start to think about some of those things, you know, where you want to be in 5 years or, you know, where you hope you could be in 10 years or kind of where you'd like for your career to go if it could go the way you want it to and so forth. So, you know, and there have been a lot of changes, and it's you're right. You walk across the field a lot of times and you see a different person coaching that team. So that's, you know, unfortunately, that's seems like that's the way it is in the NFL. I don't know if that's the best way it is for the league, but a lot of quick triggers pulled, and I know there's a lot of good coaches out there, and I've coached against a lot of good coaches, and some of whom, you know, are no longer coaching. I mean, there was, you know, a point a few years ago there where we had several Super Bowl coaches pretty recently that were all out of coaching. I mean, Gruden's and Billick's and all those guys. So, you know, I don't know what that says. But it's certainly a coaching carousel, and you see that in college as well. So I don't know if that's great for everybody, but I know each team, everybody's got to make their own decision and do what they think's best. And you know, when you're not making those decisions, then there isn't too much you can do about it. But you know, I've been fortunate that we've been able to, you know, have some consistency here and in our organization and all that. Certainly, it was a long climb from, you know, where we were in 2000. You know, it was a rough situation there, way over the cap and not very many players and didn't win very many games. And, you know, but fortunately things got better. And so, you know, I've had an opportunity to be here for a while, and, you know, I appreciate it.
So when you were able to move off the couch in the coach's office that you were sleeping on back in the day, you didn't have visions of grandeur when you got your own apartment for the first time as a coach?
Yeah, that's about right. You know, there's a lot of little things that you appreciate as a coach. Yeah. Exactly. And, sometimes just a good place to sleep and a five-minute shorter drive could mean a lot.
Look at it this way, Bill. It means a lot of different systems for teams next year. You'll be looking at Syracuse film and a lot of other film out there. That's what it means.
Well, it sure does. And that's, you know, anytime you have new coaches come to an organization, that means that you'll have new systems. And inevitably, you'll have all new players because some of the players that are there won't fit the new system. And that makes some transition, puts some transition in that part of it as well. So it's always challenging.
All right, I got one that final question.
Go ahead.
Yeah. How different is it from the regular season? You talk an awful lot about in playoffs, one simple mistake could mean our entire season. So players obviously have to be aware of every single move they make. Do you coach any differently in the playoffs than you do in the regular season? Where in the regular season you might look at something and say, well, it's early in the game. I think we can come back and we can make something happen here. As opposed to the playoffs where you look at it differently.
No, I think you do look at it a little bit differently. I think that you, or at least I do, I try to look at it from the standpoint that every play that we call, every decision that we make could be the one that, you know, determines our season. And there is no, you know, second chance. There's no second opportunity. Now, not that you don't want to make out every one of those good during the regular season. I'm not saying that. But, you know, when you think about a play, you've really got to think about it. Is this what we want in this situation, and is this the person we want doing this, or is this the person we want doing that, or is that the way we really want to do it? And I think you just put a little extra thought into it because you know that one mistake can end your season. And I think you just double, triple, quadruple check, think through everything, just keep running it by, just trying to make sure that you're doing the absolute best thing. With whatever it happens to be, you know, whatever the play is or the strategy or that type of thing, you really want to, you know, just be as thorough as you can on it. Again, not that you're not always doing that, but I will also say at this time of year, there's no next opponent. You know, we don't even know who we play next, even if we could play another game. So that's not the way it is in the regular season. So I think you just devote more of your resources to the one game at hand, because if you don't do well on that one, you know, the rest of it's a waste of time. So you really put everything you have into what's at right immediately in front of you, and you don't really think about next week because there may not be next week if you don't do well.
The Coach's Hour is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. Time now for the Coach's Question of the Week, brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers and their winter event going on now at your local Mercedes-Benz dealers on the web at mbusa.com. This week's question, Bill, is from Annie in Charlestown. Annie wants to know, is there a particular anecdote you'd like to share about a 40-year Pats employee, Don Brosher, who recently passed from leukemia?
Oh, boy, well, there's a lot of them. I think maybe the most noteworthy one would be one that happened about a month ago when, you know, Donnie had gone through various treatments of chemotherapy, of radiation, bone marrow transplant, and all that. And he showed up at the San Francisco game, and he was here for us for the Monday night game. He was in the locker room. He was doing his job. He was, you know, helping players get ready. He was putting stuff away. He was taking care of things before, during, and after the game, just like he always did. And I think when we look back on that now, we realize the physical and emotional pain and turmoil that he was going through. But we never had a sense of that at that point. We just probably felt everything was going good, to be honest with you, because that was the attitude he had, and he was doing what he normally did. So I think it really is a great tribute to him and his talk about physical and mental toughness. I think he kind of pushed it to maybe a little bit of a higher standard there for all of us that Monday night. And so I think that kind of sums up Donnie right there. You know, all the years he spent with the Patriots, it was about the team. It was about him doing his job. It was about him taking care of everybody else, being unselfish. And the last time he really came in and worked with us, that's the way it was. And I think we all know now what he was going through to do that. So as much appreciation and love as we had for him before, I think it just went up a couple notches.
Pretty amazing when you think about it, 40 years. Think about the history of this franchise and all of the different eras.
The turnover of coaches.
Right? And Donnie was here for a good portion of it.
Great guy. He'd act like it was coming out of his own pocket. If you ask him for a new T-shirt, he'd be grumpy about it. But then
that was his job,
but
Steve.
That afternoon, there'd be a new T-shirt in your locker. It was great to have in the locker room and just... I'm glad that I got to know him for the time that I did.
You know, I'd say all the years that I worked with him too. Whenever there was a special situation, you know, a guy needed a different insole for a shoe, or he needed this pad or that pad or whatever it happened to be, he always came through with it.
Always.
He always came through with it. I don't know where he got some of that stuff or
yep.
how he could get it overnight or in half a day, and something would come up in the morning and we need something for a game that afternoon, but somehow he either built it, bought it, found it, I don't know how, but he, whatever we needed, he had for us. And, again, that's really the mark of a good equipment manager, kind of a good offensive lineman, you know, always doing the job. You don't hear their name. They're not out there in the bright lights, but when something needs to get done, it gets done. And he did that.
And it's fitting. He will be recognized on Patriots equipment on Sunday. You guys are going to have a little logo apparently on the helmet.
Right.
Good thing.
Right.
All right, Coach. Good luck on Sunday. We'll see you back here on Monday.
Okay. Appreciate it. All right. Thanks, Mike. Steve.
Okay. Bill.